DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
Welcome to Not Another Podcast. I am James.
All by myself.
Don't wanna be.
All by myself.
Anymore.
You know, maybe I'll just start doing this shit by myself.
I'm Big Jim Willis.
I'm Samantha.
And I am Bryce. And a little warning we're recording would be nice so I can actually record.
Ah, oh, shit.
What, you didn't get it from the 3-2-1?
Yeah, because I can open two screens in 3 seconds.
See,
I mean,
this is why you start recording as soon as you
I mean,
get connected.
Mine probably could, but I'm not fast enough.
Hey, but more importantly...
That was
big...
great!
More importantly, Big Jim is back. How you been, buddy?
Yay!
I am doing fantastic. I'm glad to see in the weeks that I was missing that you guys finally got your act together and this show is running like a well-oiled machine.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, Jim, you were kind of bringing us down. I mean, you were really messing up the flow and...
Yeah. No, I'm an agent of chaos, I'm aware.
Now that you're back, it's like it's going swimmingly.
Fantastic, like the West Nile virus, or you know, monkeypox. You know, I'm finally finding my rhythm, finding my stride, infecting the listeners.
The swine flu is what we liken you to.
You would not be the first to make that assumption, but no, it's great. Like the class is finally finished. I've completed my requirements, and I can consider myself an alumni of Thaddeus Stevens Institute of Technology.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yay.
So, for the last 6 weeks, we have been impatiently waiting for your return because we knew you were going to have stories about the educational process. And to finally put to rest, we've had a bet going.
Okay.
How many times you would set yourself on fire?
Well, I hate to disappoint you all, but that number would be zero. I worked predominantly with TIG torches, which uses gas and electricity to melt metal and everything else. So we weren't using like acetylene torches, which would be the really cool kind that you would see in like your average
fire.
Yeah, like the kind you'd see like in an A-Team episode or, you know, in Aliens, like when they pull out those little torches to kind of weld through the doors and everything else. Those were acetylene. We were using TIG torches. So I didn't set myself on fire. I did, however, electrocute myself a couple of times. Mostly because... Oh, so very many. Hard to count. The brain gets a little fuzzy. I am hairless on my left side now.
Is it fair to say that if you were using the acetylene torches, that you would have caught yourself on fire?
At least myself. Maybe maybe one of the other students in class as well.
Or a couple of classrooms.
Yeah, I think it was more of a safety hazard that they kept us to just electricity and not fire.
So technically, we all still win.
The only people that lose really are the people that give me health care because they really so much electrical burn cream. No, the place that we were working at predominantly at the school was a real basic, no frills kind of classroom for welding. Real like just cement floors, and they had us like in our own little partitions that were like just cinder blocked. It was kind of like where Clubber Lang was working out. In Rocky III, so that gives you any kind of an indication. Real basic kind of place, and so We had a metal table that we would set all of our stuff on to work on our projects. And those of you who know me well, or just sort of in passing, know I sweat a lot. I'm sweating now. Regardless of what conditions I am in, I can always find a way to produce moisture. If it were my X-Men ability, my name would be Moist, I guess. Which is just really not a really solid, you know, it wouldn't be cool like if it came out of my feet, I could kind of glide on it. No, that's nothing like that. No, it's just my face and my arms and everything else. And so I would have my
Quick,
torch
moist,
set up.
Gross him out. Shake your face.
No, they'd be bringing me in like if there was like a drought, you know, or a famine of some sort. Like we need to water the crops. Get quick. Bring Moist in here to sort of, you know, share his bodily fluids with these poor starving villagers.
Little known fact, Moist was actually the fifth horseman of the apocalypse.
Famine, war, pestilence.
Death and Moist.
And Moist, yeah. I kind of came in at the end to sort of mop up for the most part.
He's like the jackass younger brother.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get a horse. He was riding a donkey.
I had it was like a slip and slide, like a demonic slip and slide that it would just I moistened as I sort of progressed
as
along.
As you slid. Yeah. I figured you'd show up in an Uber late.
Hey guys, what are like
you? No, not even an Uber. It would be a Lyft.
Yeah. Ooh.
It'd be an e-scooter. Come on, you guys.
No, it'd be a taxi.
Fucking taxi.
A water taxi, yes. But my torch
comes in on his own gondola.
I was just going to say, my torch, when it's all set up, I have, you know, you plug it in, you turn on your tank, you turn on the torch itself, and then it's there's a big cable that you ground the current so that the electricity, you know, has a place to go. And you would clamp that onto the metal table. And they told us the very first day, like, okay, you're going to need, they gave us all the supplies that we need. So we got our hoods and clamps and all kinds of other tools, all that we had those to keep. We had gloves and the whole thing. So it was like this big gift bag of stuff that we were going to use throughout the course. And they gave out these long sleeve cotton shirts that we were supposed to wear, vastly underestimating my dimensions, because I put it on. It was like Chris Farley, the fat guy in a coat, trying to get, like, this is not going to work at all. So, like, well, just find a long sleeve cotton shirt, which of course I didn't do because it's fucking summertime in Pennsylvania. The humidity, my balls were just swimming the entire time. And so I would just wear short sleeve shirts, which, you know, most for the most part was fine. But once we started welding for a while, the moisture from my arm would come in contact with the table. So I would start to weld something and I would just get to shit repeated, you know, and sometimes it was my arm. Sometimes it was my gut. Sometimes it was my scrotes. Any part of my body that came in contact with the table. When the torch was going, that was moist, would sort of allow the current to arc. And so like I said, I'm completely hairless on the one side. I look like Two-Face if, you know, he was like part Harvey Dent, part Olympic swimmer, or powder, if you will. Yeah, take that, soak that image in. Where's that movie spinoff, DC?
More importantly, has your sense of taste come back?
It has, and all I taste are nickels.
Is your heartbeat regular?
I love, but I don't
define regular.
Yeah.
Steady.
No, but you can dance to the rhythm.
Remix.
I will say that that's such an eloquent way to put your shirt size. So that really struck me as funny. It was, you know, they woefully underestimated my dimension.
Like,
I'm going to say that someday.
Everybody else in the class were, they were mostly kids. They were just like fresh out of high school, about to go into college. There was one woman in our class, which was awesome. She was actually in the military. And so she had studied welding when she was enlisted, but now that she was, you know, she was no longer military personnel, she had taken some time off, and so this class was basically a refresher course for her. And she was around about my age. And then there's me, like, you know, older guy, you know, just profusely sweating the whole, like an Alabama boxing commissioner, you know, or Boss Hog, just like a constant sheen of moisture on me at all times. And so there was all of us. And then there was two guys that were actually there for, they were working through a halfway house. So they were trying to get out of prison and drug and alcohol program. And so the state was paying for them to take these classes. And the instructor nicknamed the one kid, who was actually fatter than I was, his nickname was Buttercup. And the other guy was, I guess, an amateur tattoo artist trying to turn pro. So his body was covered in some really bad, just real basic fucking tattoos.
You are breaking.
What's that?
Sorry, I don't know if my computer was freaking out or if anyone else heard that, but it's okay now. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
It sounded like you were digitized for a second. It was.
But no, this guy was just covered in some real pedestrian tattoos. He actually, on his one arm, had tattooed himself the EA Sports logo.
Oh my gosh.
But it looked like a bad prison tat, like, you know, like it wasn't like connected.
Did it with a ballpoint pen?
Yeah, or like a fucking a paper clip and a VCR motor, and it just did not look good at all. And so he was just covered in these like just heinous tattoos. But they were there one day, and the next day we all show up for class, and the instructor's like, "Yeah, those guys aren't in the class anymore." And we're like, "Well, what happened?" And like, "Oh, well, they got piss tested and they came up dirty." So they had to go back to prison. I'm just like, what about this class would, you know, just like, oh, dude, had a great day yesterday. We willed a bunch of shit. Let's go smoke some crystal meth. I don't know. We did work around scrap metal, so that might have been just too much of a temptation for them. Not really sure. But without doubt, the coolest part of the class was our instructor, this guy Jason, worked at a place called Tate Towers, which more than likely you guys have never heard of before. However, this building, this business, Tate Towers, they design and build all the sets and stages for, they've done Olympics, they've done Super Bowl 50, they did the entire stage setup for Coachella, for Cher, for Justin Timberlake, for Drake, for 21 Pilots. Right now, they're currently working on Elton John's farewell tour, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And so we got to walk around in this gigantic complex and see all the little components that go into building and designing these sets. And the Elton John one alone was mammoth. Like almost every number one song that he had its own stage design and change set up for it. So it was just jaw-dropping to be able to walk around and sort of see all the things that go into how that process gets done. And we were instructed emphatically and repeatedly that we were not allowed to pull our phones out at any point while we were there because of the simple fact that, you know, obviously these designs are very private. Occasionally some of these artists would show up to sort of see what the progress was for their stage design. And there was a story about a guy that had been working there for 9 years. He was a manager, you know, really liked, well-liked, well-loved by his coworkers, everything else. But they were designing something for Beyonce. And so she shows up one day, like you fucking do, in a helicopter. Like it lands on the back lot. There's like a baseball field behind the complex. And so she lands on the field in a helicopter. And gets out, and this guy pulls out his phone and snaps a picture of her, and like an idiot, puts it on his Facebook. Shows up the next day, and he's just fired, immediately gone. Just for taking a picture of her, like nothing, like none of the actual stage design was there. But you know, if you take a picture of the member of the Illuminati, you know, you get, and then you know,
can't piss him off.
Yeah, to the Phantom Zone or whatever. But yeah, It was really cool to be able to kind of walk around and sort of see, like I said, all the little moving parts that go into doing that, and then to work on projects there. And actually, the woman that was working in our group, she took a test at the very end of the program and got hired on at Tate Towers. So she works there now along with Jason. So she's making, oh God, I don't even know how much money per hour to work out there now. So that was definitely the program.
Does this program help with like job seeking afterwards?
Yeah. They have like their own jobs board that we were given access to. And so the fact that we have Stevens trade or Thaddeus Stevens College on our resume now, mm-hmm. The few people that I've actually been able to talk to in the past week that I put applications out to were immediately impressed and everything else. And were, you know, that your name goes to the top of the list as soon as they see that on there. So,
well, if you ever move back here, I got a place for you. I guarantee you'll get something.
Yeah, and it's the jobs start like it's like $17-18 an hour. So I just want to get a job fucking welding. I'll weld stripper poles. I don't give a fuck. Like, you know, I'll weld this for, you know, children. I don't care. Whatever it is that you need me to weld, I'm going to weld the shit out of it.
That could be the title of our episode. I'll weld stripper poles for children. I don't care.
Or just I'll weld stripper poles for children.
Or just a charity.
I'll weld children. I don't care. I can make.
you want a kid? I'll weld one for you.
Yeah. John and Kate plus four, because I welded two of them together. But yeah, so aside from that, now it's just the waiting game to sort of see what I can do or where I can go from here. But it was a really good feeling to be able to take the classes and complete it, and because I mean, I'll be honest, I never thought that I would go back to any kind of schooling after my 1 year at Temple University. I just didn't think that was really going to ever be in the cards, but just to be able to step up and take these classes and complete the course, it's a crazy feeling. Like, I feel like I've accomplished something awesome, and now it's just the waiting game to get that one last step into this new job skill that I can take anywhere. So hopefully, like I said, something will come through in the next couple of weeks, and I'll be able to start working full time and eventually start building my killdozer. That is my goal.
Well, dude, I'm super psyched for you on this journey that you're on. Where does it put your stand-up? Are you, like, you're still doing that?
Yeah, I've done a couple of shows here and there during the course of the weeks that I've been away, which were really a lot of fun. I did some show pretty close to my house with these three guys. All three of them were headliners, and they've just been touring all over. And they had a random night off, and so they came into Lancaster to visit one of their friends. Like, hey, let's do a show. And I got a phone call to come feature for them. And I was happy not only to get the call, but to know that I'm developing a reputation and not as like the crazy guy that, you know, because in Portland, my reputation was a little bit different. That I'd done some things there that I don't think I'll ever do again. There was one show in particular that I did where I was on a showcase, and like every comic that was going up was just destroying it. I think it was like Adam Pazzi was on the show, Tim Hammer, Shane Torres. I mean, there's some really big names. And so when it was finally my turn to go up late, like I don't know what I'm going to be able to do. So I just started doing crowd work. And by the end of it, I actually pulled my balls out and rested them on the beard hair of the bouncer of the venue that I'm performing at.
Jesus!
Because I made the comment that his beard looked very soft and warm, the kind of thing I want to build a nest in, that I would like to like make a hammock for my balls for. And he called my bluff, and he came up, and he's just like, present them. I'm like, fuck, I can't bitch out now, so.
Jim, anything for a laugh, Willig.
Yeah, pretty much. Dignity, shame, what are these things? I am not aware. I am merely a conduit by which chuckles and laughs are had.
Well, glad...
Yeah, I'm building...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm building a different reputation here in town, and it's a lot of fun to be able to turn on this new chapter of my life as an adult. Fuck, I never thought I was going to be this, you know, at this point in juncture. But hey, you know, it happens to the best of us.
Pretty soon, you're going to be paying bills and taxes and.
Well, let's not get crazy here, okay?
Maybe a bill and like a tax.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll start slow. Baby steps. Everything is, you know, one day at a time. Each one teach one to reach one.
Well, I for one, am very proud of you. I'm very happy for you. And I can't wait to see where this journey takes you, Jim.
Thank you.
Because your life is such that you find yourself in situations that are just funny as hell. And you are a storyteller. Hands down, you're a fantastic storyteller. So I'm very intrigued in what life holds for you, because we benefit by getting the stories.
Yes, you get to put a pan underneath the drippings, the complex drippings I will baste our listenership with.
We check drip pan.
It's a drip pan of meat juice that we can then baste you with.
Exactly, yes.
Hence the moist.
Lubricated.
Nice, yeah.
Full circle. That's what we did, full circle. So, I know you guys keep up with the news just like I do. And Bryce, I saw this story, and immediately you were the first one I thought of. I believe it was yesterday. I am not 100% sure, but there was a video game tournament in Florida that turned very, very
yes.
violent. And my first thought, and this will show what kind of horrible human being I am, but my first thought was, A, this guy is terrible at Madden. And B, immediately followed by, that's one hell of a rage quit.
Yeah.
So I am the worst
story.
Human being, I will admit it, but how much of a rage problem do you have with video games? Now, Bryce, I know you can attest to this because you play games just as much as I do. And there are times when things just aren't going well and you throw your fucking controller across the room.
I haven't actually gotten to that point, but yes, I have gotten upset a time or two.
I love how diplomatic you're being.
Of course.
I've played games with you.
And my birds picked up a few things from that.
Yes. Yes, it has.
I think anyone that has played video games, I mean, obviously it's part of the frustration of playing any game where, you know, it's you against a computer. I remember all the way back with the first NES console when I had when I was playing the first Super Mario Brothers, and I was on 8-4 trying to beat Bowser. And actually, no, I was on 8-2 or 8-3, so I wasn't quite to the last level yet. And arguably was one of, it was the hardest level in the game as far as I was concerned. And so my dad had moved the my TV and my Nintendo into the kitchen because I had it in my room, and he kept hearing profanity and things, you know, being thrown around. Like, he thought I had Tourette's for a while. He wasn't sure. And so he moved all that down to the kitchen because my grades were starting to suffer. And so it was like, after you get your homework done, everything else, then you were allowed to have a couple of hours of gameplay. And so as you all will attest, there was no save point in those early days. There was no code that you could plug in.
You either beat it or you're fucked.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's a lot of frustration that would be built up at that point. And so I remember there was a it was set up so the TV and the console was like in this little nook area, and there was a wall to my immediate right. So every time I would lose, I couldn't afford a new controller, so I would just beat the wall next to me with the meaty side of my fist. And I didn't realize that the wall there was just drywall. And so over time, like, it was like the Karate Kid where I'm like, I'm building up a callus on my meaty. It was my masturbating hand also. So it was an aggressively strong. And eventually I fucking put a hole in this wall.
Really and quick, is that the same as your sandwich eating hand?
Yes. Yeah. So sandwich eating.
All in the
so it's really got some core strength going.
Without doubt, yeah. It was sandwich eating, self-pleasuring, and video game playing hand. So with definitely just, yeah. And so I put a hole in this wall that, you know, I have no idea how to repair. And my dad's in the next room. He's watching, I don't know, like Dancing, not Dancing with the Stars, fucking some 80 or some 90s late night show. And so I'm panicking because I don't want him to realize that there's now a hole in the wall in the kitchen. So I had like this, one of the games that I bought came with like one of those little like pocket sized posters. So I sneak up into my room past him, trying to pretend like everything's fine. I got like plaster dust, you know, kind of like on my right side. So I'm trying to like, you know, position myself past him so he doesn't see me. Get up to my room, find the poster, come back down quickly as I can. Position the poster, realize only then that I don't have any tape to affix the poster to the wall. I realized also that my tears were not adhesive, so I couldn't use those or any of my moisture to adhere the poster to the wall. So now I know I have to go back into the living room where my father is sitting and ask kind of nonchalantly, like, you know, hey, so do we have any scotch tape? He's like, why? I'm like, I'm working on a project for school. It's about deceiving your parents, apparently. And so eventually I got the tape and I affixed it, and it was like a Mission Impossible kind of thing. And so that was all done. And I had to wait like a couple of weeks before I could actually have some alone time in the house to try and repair this. So I found this big tub of putty that I knew that it was used to fix drywall. But that's all I knew. I had the trowel, I had the putty, I had the hole. I just figured I would just glob enough of this shit into the hole that eventually problem would solve itself. Yeah.
Just shove it in the hole.
Yeah, just shove it in the shove the goo in the hole. Shove the goo in the hole until your problem goes away. Unfortunately, that did not happen because I guess there's supposed to be like a screen that you would sort of put there as a patch, and then you would cover that with the goop or whatever. I don't fucking know. This is why I'm not a carpenter. I work in metal because you can just weld that
I
shit.
I can tell you how if you need me to.
Oh, it's a bit late now. You know, the
I was going to say that hole's probably still there, up. Right?
The poster is still there. His dad has never taken it down.
It's a load-bearing structure now. I actually had it
all that tape.
Yeah. You just put a lot of tape over it.
All the tape.
Tears.
God, we're going through tape like nobody's business. Can someone explain to me?
Well, what about you guys? Like, what are some of the examples of gamer rage that you've experienced or exerted in times of absolute frustration?
I have broken a controller.
I have not broken a controller, surprisingly. I get very vocal.
Yeah, you do.
Very, very vocal and very colorful in my language.
I this was in the days of the Nintendo, just like Jim, and it was right before the big cheat code came out. So it was Contra.
Okay.
And I was pretty far into it, doing well, and my brother distracted me. So, and
love and support, or what did he distract you with?
Just little brother nonsense. Just the, hey, what you doing? Can I play? I want to play.
Oh, so he was trying to reach out to you on some basic fundamental level, and you were like, no, I need to get this shirtless guy, the shirtless commando, to the end of the game first.
Yeah. Priorities, man. Jesus. And I had been at it for a few hours anyway, so frustration building, trying to avoid the call of the mother, which had been going on for like 15 minutes by that point. And it was just one distraction too many. Lost my last guy, which meant start over. So the controller went into the wall. And the controller didn't fare so well. So yeah, there's a, and then the crux of it is that like about a week later I got the code.
You're like, oh, this is easy.
Oh, wow, this would have been handy a week ago when I still had a controller.
Yeah, now that seems to be because I know that's how I will torture my children, or at least my child at this point, when she's old enough to have her own gaming system. Some of my friends' parents would do the same thing, which was if they got bad grades or if they acted up and they got grounded in some way, one of two things would happen. Either they would take the game away completely, or more diabolical was they would just take the controllers away. And so the game is still there. The system is still there. The TV is still there. The power cord is still there.
They can see it.
Just can't do anything.
Yeah. That's psychological. That's the kind of fucking up your kid that I want to do.
That's Gitmo shit right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, when I get frustrated with a game, I just take a breath, turn it off, and figure I'll come back to it later.
That would be nice.
In some game cases, they've been sold like that day. This game sucks. Why did I spend the $60?
I'm going to go sell it and get 30.
That's half my investment.
Did you guys see a while back GameStop was shopping around about selling the company? And people are like, oh, yeah, I'll give you $1.50. They're trolling them hardcore.
You know what? We're just going to keep the company.
Pretty much.
Well, and that's the thing is GameStop really... I know a lot of places where, like, oh, you bring in a bunch of games, you figure you'll trade them in, and you'll buy yourself, you know, a new game, maybe, with all the games that you have. No, they give you, like,
not
any,
GameStop.
They give you, like, rubles on the dollar.
Yeah.
They give you, like, currency that from a country that doesn't exist anymore is worth a store credit.
Yeah, and then their used games are almost as much as their new games. I'm like, you know, if I'm going to buy it, you know, for this price, I'll just buy it new.
That's exactly what I do so that I can kind of give them the fuck you so they get a little bit of that money, but the developer gets more because they get a shit ton more for their used games than they do their new games.
Well, what's really funny is when I go and I see a used game, you know, that's like $30 used, but I can walk over like two or three doors down to like Target and get it brand new for $20.
Yep.
I'm like, eh. Sorry, guys.
Well, like the store, the shelf life for value on games is so fickle. You know, like when the game first back in the day, obviously when the game first came out, and I'm gonna way date myself because my first home gaming system was an Atari, and so I would go to the KB Toy Store in the mall. And they had like a little kiosk area there where they had like they didn't actually have the games. They had like a catalog and you had to pull off a piece of paper and take it up to the front. And they would go in the back and open up a vault just to pull out one cartridge for like E.T. or Asteroids or whatever the fuck it was.
That reminds me of Toys R Us. You'd have to go back. They had a wall in the aisle and they had the little slip of paper. You'd go up, pay for it, and then take the receipt to the caged vault.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was like the evidence locker in a police station.
Exactly.
That's how immigrants have to get their kids back now.
I worked that vault one Christmas. It was awesome.
Thank you, Bryce.
That's cool. I just imagine these immigrant parents walking up to like this cage. You have to like put a vague description of their kid. Like, I don't know, he's short, dark hair. I don't know, has like a look of like sadness and fear in his face.
Can you be more specific, please? That's
just keep bringing out kid after kid. Like, is this your kid? No. Is this your kid? No.
No. That one in the back might be it.
No.
I haven't seen him in a long fucking time, so.
It's anybody's guess at this point.
Look, have you deported any kids lately? He might have been in that crop.
Check the return. There's like this big pile of kids like in the return area.
Like I feel like this should be like a Family Guy flashback or something.
I know.
Give it a year.
I know,
Peter's right? working at the child returns desk.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing. You didn't return the last kid you rented, so...
Do you got your receipt?
Yeah.
Okay, if we see this on Family Guy, we are sending this episode to Seth MacFarlane and being like, pay us or hire us.
Where's our money?
Fuck you, pay me.
This gotta have my
I'm just going to say thank you for listening.
Yeah, no, that's honestly...
Tell him to tweet out the episode.
Keep listening.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that.
Producer, investor.
It's funny you mentioned that because when Bridgetown Comedy Festival there in Portland, Oregon, was first starting out, a lot of local comics were also obviously on the roster because they weren't pulling in quite as many big names, so they had a lot of slots to fill in all these different venues. And your friend and mine, Don Frost, was appearing in several different locations, and they have a lot of big names that were through there, and also a lot of comedy bookers and management were there, as well as, and we didn't find this out until later, but comedy writers were in the crowd for Comedy Central's news show, The Tonight Show, all kinds, anywhere where they need to have material. And Don Frost had a bit about how anal beads are such where when you're pulling them out, you have to pull them out slowly because your partner's not a fucking lawnmower. You're not supposed to just yank it out as hard as you can. And sure enough, like 2 weeks after that year's Bridgetown was done, we're watching the Tonight Show, or not the Tonight, the Comedy Central news show with Jon Stewart. And sure enough, that joke was worked into the monologue. And I was just like, "Well, you need to sue somebody." And Don, of course, being Don, very zen about the whole thing, he's like, it's just cool to have that joke out there." I'm like, "Yeah, I don't know if you want to be associated with like the anal tearing joke, like you know, to have that in court to be like, Your Honor, I submit to you that this joke about tearing the anal cavity out of your partner was in fact mine and not the property of Comedy Central." But getting all the way back to video games, which was the original topic.
Is that where we were?
I think so.
We're really good at derailing this stuff because I don't know anything about video games.
Well, when I was in high school, the system that was all the rage was PlayStation, obviously. And so all my friends, you know, got PlayStations. And when it was finally my turn, right about Christmas or whatever, I wanted to be different. I wanted to have a different system so that, you know, we'd have another option. So I begged and pleaded for my mom to get me the Atari Jaguar because it was as awesome as the PlayStation and a lot more, you know, options were available and everything else. And it was the same thing where all the brand new games were like $49.99. And everything else. And the graphics were garbage. The games were garbage. No, so I remember coming over to my friend's house and we're all playing PlayStation. Like, hey, anybody want to play Atari Jaguar? And like, no.
No.
That's the equivalent of like, you know, coming over to your friend's house for like poker night. Like, hey, anybody want to play Jax? Like, no, nobody wants to play Jax. Just fucking fuck you in your ball, little what have you. I got that for, I think it was like for my birthday in November. And between then and Christmas, the Jaguar system, actually, no, it was after Christmas. It was within a couple of months afterwards, and the whole Atari company just folded, went tits up. So these games went from being like $50 a pop to us being at a flea market and a guy selling like four games for $15. So it's like, yay, like my wish came true. I got all these game options now I can play on my shitty useless system that, you know, are now pennies on the fuck dollar. And so now I'm trying to go to GameStop and trade in my games for something better to sort of put towards a PlayStation. And I actually walked in with my Jaguar, and I had like the Jaguar, I had a shit ton of games, I had all the books, I had a code book that I had dumped, I don't know how much money into this Jaguar system setup. And the guy behind the counter straight up laughed in my face. He was just like, what do you want me to do with this? I'm like, well, I was wondering if maybe I could trade these. And he's like, for what? A doorstop? Because that's pretty much all it's good for, bro. And I'm like, God damn. He's like, well, if you want to buy one of our games, which I ended up doing, I went there to make money. I ended up giving him another $15. I bought like Wolfenstein 3D. Which was like the coolest, but I kind of got my revenge because later on I had a yard sale when I was moving from Lancaster to Portland, and I kind of felt bad, and I kind of didn't. This young kid came up with his parents, and they were looking at the Jaguar system, and they wanted to buy my whole package with all the games and everything else. What they didn't know was the only controller that I had for it, I had broken in a fit of rage. And so they're like, okay, well, we'll give you, I think I was asking like $40 for everything. They're like, we'll give you 25 for all of that. And I'm just like, okay, I'll take it. And like, this does work, right? I'm like, oh yeah, no, totally does. Totally works. Yeah. Oh, here you go.
This
enjoy.
Works,
have fun.
This works. And this sometimes works.
Yeah. It's like, I have the Atari Jaguar like glove, which was like an isotoner glove that, you know, I had made myself, like all these additional add-ons that I just sort of like played off as like, oh yeah, no, the Atari microwave, totally, you can make Hot Pockets while you're playing a game.
Atari microwave, I had one of those.
Just drawing Atari on various, like, how, oh, the Atari blender, yeah, no, it's great. You can make a daiquiri while you're playing, you know, Alien versus Marines or whatever. Yeah. No, my life is just full of sad stories like that, so.
And that's why we love
it. Fuck it!
Yeah. Okay, you've got those stories. I've got my shitty relationships. We all have something.
We all collect something that's broken, basically.
Mine are hearts.
I just realized I collected all of you.
You collect what? Strays.
Apparently, I got everybody by default.
You got us in the divorce.
Yeah, you guys win, and like, and win is in quotation marks. Like, yeah, do you really win? You really? No, no.
It's like having that one dud kid. You know, you've got like three of them, but there's one that's like.
I'm sorry. Did you say dumb or Doug?
Dud.
I mean, you'd probably name him Doug, right?
Doug, yeah. This is our dud. We call him Doug.
Doug the dud.
Isn't that a girl?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Something that I was I wanted to bring up.
We caught him at an ice yard sale.
Jesus. Bringing it back around.
They were $5 for $10. We figured.
Slightly irregular children.
We gave one to the Smiths for Christmas. I think that was the good one.
That one is one we got on sale too. Who knew? Should have kept that one.
No, the story that I wanted to bring up was obviously the James Bond, the next James Bond movie that they're working on, because I think they're trying to phase out Daniel Craig and bring in a new Bond. And so speculation was getting thrown around about who might step into the shoes to continue the franchise. And I know that Idris Elba, his name was brought up, which I think would be a phenomenal choice. He's smooth enough and he's got enough action cred that I think he could pull off being Bond. But of course, a lot of people are like, well, no, James Bond has to be a fucking pretentious white guy in order to fill those shoes properly.
Will Smith played Jim West.
Exactly. Thank you. And oh yeah, did they get race kind of mixed up? Oh yeah, Jesus Christ. You know, just another character. They're like, I think traditionally he's a white guy. Like, actually, no. You got to reread that book, bro.
Do you know where that came from?
No.
Elitism?
The book. No, I'm talking about the Bible.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you just say, do you know where that came from? He was definitely not white.
Yeah.
No one in that book was white.
Oh, and here's another one that gets him. He was Jewish.
Yeah, not squeaky white, you know, meth biker looking white guy. You know, it's, you know, if you read the actual, like, gamer description of the Jesus character, if the Bible were a video game, obviously he does not fit a certain criteria. Yeah, Jesus would have a big Jew fro. Could you imagine, like, if they actually had a historically accurate depiction of Jesus on the cross, like just big Jew fro?
That would wreck the religion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they do mass produce and create black Jesus. And they have a Jesus for every race. They make crucifix, you know, with the Jesus of every race. So, I mean,
yeah, the Asian.
It's like an American Girl doll. You get whatever race you identify with, I guess.
But I think on Facebook I saw somebody throw out the possibility of, and I already have my vote on this one as well, Peter Dinklage as James Bond.
That'd be pretty cool.
I'm okay with this.
You know, I think I would definitely love to see Peter Dinklage, you know, with the 00s, like just pulling it. Because that man has proven, regardless of his stature, he is 9 feet tall, in my opinion. He can act, he can pull off any fucking character he wants. Mm-hmm. So I would say Peter Dinklage is the next 007, or 003.5, or however you want to qualify it.
If anything, he's going to be in a comedy parody version.
He would definitely be smarter than any villain that he faced.
Yeah.
But I feel like the suspension of disbelief for that Bond to get out of traps would be really high, unless the entire cast was little people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he would be a really great main villain for a Bond.
Oh, that would... Yeah. I would actually go for that. Dinklage as a villain?
He would be wonderful as like that, or like a really sadistic bad guy.
Because then it's like you build up the whole movie of what this villain is, and then when you see him, you're like, wait a minute. Because then he could get really dark on you. It's like, oh, because I'm short?
He wouldn't even bring it up. Like, he would be above that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As a character, like, he wouldn't even...
That would be, you know,
that would just roll off of his back, like, bitch, please. And then he'd torture you and you'd die.
But that would be Bond's thing, because he would be expecting someone of his stature, and he's like, this is throwing me off. And Dinklage is like, hey, fuck you.
Yeah, I love what they did in the MCU with Peter for Infinity War.
Yes! I thought that was
so fucking awesome. I'm like, yeah. God, did this... This couldn't have been a more perfect fucking role for him
casting
to play.
Choice.
Because the whole time they're talking about the dwarves, so you're expecting dwarves, and then here's this fucking giant, and you're like, wait
giant.
A minute.
What?
That is awesome.
Wait a minute.
we got Peter Dinklage as the villain. Who do we cast as Bond, and who do we cast as the sexy love interest?
Well, I think the only requirement for Bond is it has to be a British actor. That's the only thing I'm going to put on it. I would agree with you, Jim. I think Idris Elba would be my number one pick. But, he's come out and said, no, it's not going to happen. So, like, I'm kind of lost of, like, who might be...
Benedict Cumberbatch?
I would say yes if he hadn't already done Sherlock.
Well, I mean, Sherlock was Bond-ish in the sense that, you know, it had all like the problem-solving skills that a Bond character would need. And in, was it Into Darkness, where he played Khan?
Yeah.
I think that showed his action chops as well. So I think that Benedict could potentially pull off a Bond if written properly. And also as Doctor Strange. Oh, my fucking God, did I love him as Doctor Strange.
Oh, dude, he's perfect as Doctor Strange. And I don't disagree, but I just feel like watching him as Bond, I would just be watching action Sherlock, which they kind of already
not a bad,
have. So.
Yeah, not a bad spinoff, I would say. I would watch Action Sherlock.
No, I would too. You know who I'm kind of leaning towards is Matt Smith, who played the 11th Doctor?
Yeah, 11th.
Yeah. I think he'd be okay. He doesn't have like the real rugged good looks that most Bonds do, which I think would kind of endear him. But he can definitely do action because he was in Terminator Genesis as Skynet, which was odd, but it was actually kind of cool.
So wait, he played the John Connor / Skynet character?
No, he actually played the Skynet system who infected the John Connor.
Oh, okay, and I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, the looks I would say definitely would be the main.
Yeah, he's really baby faced.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I like male actor lists, and I'm like, okay, let's see what we can find. Because I mean, while I can see some of these guys as Bond, I'm really just not feeling it. Matt Smith, I think, is just too. I would not really. I don't know. I just can't really see him as action. He's way too scrawny.
He doesn't have enough years under him to pull off Bond, I think. He's way too baby-faced.
Well, he doesn't look like a Bond physically either.
Yeah, but that's just training. I mean, he could easily, through a workout regimen, bulk up, so.
Mm. Who's the guy that's from The Kingsman?
Oh, the young kid? Or the guy that plays...
Yeah, Colin Firth is the older kid who plays Eggsy. Hold on.
Because, you know, I mean, because they even joke about it in The Kingsman.
No, I would be on board with that, but I think, again, that he needs a few more years on him.
Yeah.
He's still too baby-faced, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Taron
Egerton, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
honestly, Chris Pine is a good choice, but he's been in a lot of stuff. I think people are a little...
Is Pine English?
I don't know.
I thought he was American. What about the guy who plays...
I'm not paying attention to that. I'm paying attention to, like, who would be a good Bond.
No, the caveat is he has to be British. That's the only caveat we put on it. What about John Boyega?
Sean Connery wasn't British.
Yeah, but he was Scottish.
Oh, well, so facto, he's British because they, you know, fucked the gun.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can still be trained to do a really great British accent, so it doesn't matter.
Scotty,
well, technically,
the original
Americans
Scotty was British,
colonized
and he was
by
Scottish, yeah. So.
I say America is colonized by, you know, Britons that didn't want to pay taxes, so we could technically bridge that gap. You have Steve Buscemi as Bond.
I was going to say Mr. Bean.
Adam Sandler. Jeez.
Well, Mr. Bean, they had him as, like, was it Johnny English or whatever?
Yeah, he's got a third one coming out here soon. What about John Boyega? Finn.
I'm not sure who that is.
Finn from Star Wars.
Ah. Is he British?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Pretty much all of the
and he
the
can do action
new Star Wars people are.
Have any of you guys seen Attack the Block?
Yeah. I've not. I've heard amazing things
it's
about it, but I've not.
Fucking fantastic, and he definitely has the action chops just from that movie alone. I think he'd be a great Bond.
What about now he's American, and again, you can do a great British accent either way. Josh Duhamel, Duhamel.
Josh Duhamel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a great
look. You're all right.
Yeah, I think he'd be a really good Bond.
Well, if we're going to go American, I actually think Timothy Oliphant would be a better Bond than Josh Duhamel.
Oh, well, they both have that same, they both have that same look, but I'd be down Timothy Oliphant, too.
So this is an actual Brit, but Charlie Hunnam, I think, would be great.
Oh, Jack.
I fucking
love
Timmy
and
Arthur.
Fucking Jax from Sons of Anarchy.
Charlie Hunnam is just He's
see, I don't know. He can pull off. He's got the look. He's British, or he's of that, you know, ethnicity or what have you. He just, I don't know. He strikes me as a little wooden. White? I don't know if he could kind of pull off the swagger of Bond.
Dude, did no you one see thought King Arthur with Daniel him? Daniel Craig could do it.
I did.
I
watch honestly, him in that. Yeah. I think that would that'll show you that he could do it.
He could do the swagger.
Okay, I have someone. Do you guys ever watch Criminal Minds?
Yes.
What about the black guy, Shamar Moore?
Ooh.
He would be great.
I don't. He's also in SWAT now, I think. Or if that show's still on.
I think it's still on.
Yeah. Not a bad... I wouldn't say a bad choice at all. Definitely put him in the maybe pile of actors.
Okay.
Next to the pile of children.
Here's an American that I think would maybe do a decent job. Stephen Amell from Arrow.
Is he the main guy?
Yeah.
I can see that.
How about Ben Affleck?
He's in rehab, so that's not going to happen.
He's Batman!
What, Bond can't go to rehab?
I'm drunk.
Oh, dude, what about Superman?
Henry Cavill?
Yeah.
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 I think he was another name that was kind of thrown around.
He'd be a decent Bond.
Yeah.
John Hamm.
He's a good actor.
Oh, John Hamm would kill it as Bond.
Damn. Jeff Goldblum.
He really would.
Jeff Goldblum.
No. John Hamm is Bond. Jeff Goldblum is Q.
I would watch it just for the dialogue between them.
It would be all improvised. No, John Hamm's my official choice. There we go. I'd cast him. I'd watch anything that guy's in.
What about H. John Benjamin?
He should be the Archer. Bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, Archer is pretty much Bond.
Have you seen the guy, though? He's funny.
Yeah, he doesn't look like Archer.
Yeah, he's very doofy looking, but the voice just so commands respect.
He'd be a great bad guy.
Hey, what about Oscar Isaac? Going back to Star Wars again, Poe? He's got the swag.
Oh, yeah! Yeah!
Poe Dameron, yeah.
I don't know if he's British, but I think he could pull it off.
Simon Pegg?
Yes, but only if Nick Frost was Q.
Ooh.
No, Nick Frost is Bond.
Yes!
Simon Pegg is Q.
No, Simon Pegg as M.
Yes!
I could definitely see that.
Didn't
that's definitely
it kind
my vote.
Of do a Bond-like movie, though, with Hot Fuzz? I mean, wasn't that kind of...
The buddy cop movie, yeah. I love that movie. I like Hot Fuzz better than Shaun of the Dead.
Me too.
Oh, yes! There is another one out there.
Yeah.
Usually people look at me like I've just said something awful, and I'm like, fuck you, it's a better movie.
Honestly, of the two, I can't pick a better one. I love them both so much, I cannot pick one over the other.
Oh, that scene where he's got to shoot his mom, man, that just tore my fucking heart out. Let's bring it all the way down, shall we? Yeah, we're all having fun, and then Jim brings up shooting moms in the face. Go, Jim.
Did you ever fire your gun into the air while screaming?
No. So I was talking to my boyfriend, and we got on the topic of one that we started with, which was realistic zombie outbreak scenarios.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, not fantasizing anything, because like in my fantasy, I would want to keep my dogs with me, keep them alive. In reality, I would probably put them down really quick, just quick pop, pop in the head, because you can't, it's not safe to have the dogs with you. They're a huge liability. So I would have to mercy kill my dogs, which makes me super sad to think about. Yeah. But
glad you have a plan, like, though.
Huh?
Glad you have a plan.
Well, I mean, you have to. So, and then I was like, then I'd be gone. And my boyfriend's like, oh, yeah, no, so you'd have to go get your mom. And I was like, no.
Sorry.
You snooze, you lose, mom. Sorry.
Like, He's got to go get his family. He's got to go get his mom, his dad, and his sister. He has a special needs sister. He wants to make sure they're safe. Cool, fine, go. And I was like, well, I'll be gone. I mean, we could come up with a rendezvous point, but, like, I'm going to be out before traffic gets super bad. So, like, I'm gone. And he's like, oh, yeah, you got to go get your mom. I was like, no. And he was driving, and, like, I was afraid we were going to crash. He was like, what? I said, no, my mom and I have, like, already talked through this. We'll be fine. We'll find each other eventually, but don't worry about the other. Just go. The number one key is to be safe and to survive. We'll find each other later. It's fine. Go. Like, that's the family I grew up with. Like, fuck you all. Just...
Okay, I'm going to have to cut this off because we're at time, but I want to explore this conversation next week. So everyone think about a real life zombie outbreak apocalypse. I mean, everything from where you think it's going, what is the most realistic place that a zombie outbreak could start? How would it spread? And what would you really do? I mean, I know we've talked about fantasies before, but we've got a whole week now to think about real life scenario. Okay, then.
All right.
Well, no, it just kind of got me thinking, like, we could also, because, again, I think James was about to touch on it. We have kind of worked that topic quite a few times to
but
kind of throw a spin on
it.
How about, like, we kind of podcast D&D it, where one of us comes up with a scenario and the rest of us have to adapt to it with who we want to save, where we want to go. And basically, because, I mean, obviously, if we have our own designs on, you know, how it would happen, we would automatically have how we would adapt to it. Whereas if it does actually ever happen, we're not going to be the ones that are going to have the inside track on that. So one of us should come up with the scenario, and the rest of us have to come up with adapting who we save, who we leave behind, provisions, and safe haven. And then we can kind of play it from that point on. And then whoever it is that comes up with the scenario gets to throw in all the other random X factors that, you know, one wouldn't plan for but would pop up.
I like it. I like it. Let's all start thinking about that, and we'll roll for
initiative.
Thank you.
For Dungeon Master.
thanks for listening to this episode. As always, Jim, it's so good to have you back, man.
Yay!
Thanks for having me, guys. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun to be back playing with you motherfuckers.
You left me alone for weeks with these guys. How dare you?
She loves
Crisis
every
counselors
minute
are
of
standing
it.
By.
Every minute of it, all she right. loved. Until that episode that Danny was asking for videotape of her play. That got awkward.
Oh, my.
Nope, gotta come see it for real, buddy.
Gotta fly out
there.
One time
only.
He might do it. Who knows? Until next week, thanks for listening. You guys have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.